Welcome back. We are the Maggie Dawn Show, and I'm your special guest host, Tom Palswitz. And I actually have a very special guest with me today, Brad Schlykowski from Courage MKE. And the reason I wanted Brad to come on is because I think Brad, one, has a great story to tell, but two, has a way that you can help. So, Brad, I think my first question to you is what is Courage MKE and why did you start it?
Well, thanks for having me with you today. This is a pretty good, nice privilege for me, and it's a nice break. So Courage MKE is a nonprofit my husband and I founded here in Milwaukee in 2015. After we had been fostering some teens in our house, the teens that we fostered identified as LGBTQ plus in some way, shape, or form. And they all had two things in common. One, they didn't ask to be in their situation because they were not of home care for other reasons beyond things that they can control. And number two, they all had stories of rejection, torment, bullying. The last young lady that came through our house, they called us and said, we've been driving with her for 6 hours. No one wants to take her. We pulled her out of sex trafficking, and she had patches of hair missing from her head because the girls in her group home didn't like that she was bisexual. So, you know, we were both climbing corporate ladders, and we thought maybe we need to do something and give these kids a safe haven that they can live in. So we went to the community, and any gay bar that would give us a microphone, we started telling them what the problem was. And people started donating $5, $10, $20, $50, sometimes $100, right? And I tell you those numbers so that people understand the sheer volume of people that started to support these young kids that allowed us to pay cash for the first Courage House in 2018. That house opened in 2019. We're the first group home in the state of Wisconsin that is specifically for LGBT or queer children. All those children come to us with a referral from the social welfare system. And we got the question, well, why do they get a house? Why do they get a house? Well, there's over 256 other group homes in the state. The average stay in a group home is 38 days. So every 38 days, these kids are being forced to move, forced to trust some other stranger, all because they called someone a bad name or they had some big emotions and broke some dishes or something, right? So that's my response, is these kids deserve a spot to call their own because no one else wants to accept them in theirs. So we have this house, and these children that come to us have so much trauma, which is a wall in front of them, right? And if they can't be their authentic self, then we have two walls to chip through. So if we have to break through that barrier of letting them and helping them accept themselves and show them that they accepted and we love them for who they are, it allows us to start approaching that trauma in a much faster way than if we didn't have a group home for queer kids.
Yeah, and I think that, to me, that's the toughest part about it, is you're breaking through those two walls, not just one.
Right.
You know, we all know there are lots of people out there, especially children who have undergone or are undergoing trauma right now. But then you couple that with being different or being labeled as being different. Right. To me, that's a huge challenge. What led you to the decision to open up another home? So you had the first one that you created opened up in 2019. Then it led you to the next one. And can you explain
our original plan was open more of the same kind in like Madison, Green Bay, Eau Claire, you know, the bigger cities. But what we found is that the state is sending all these kids. We have contracts with 17 counties and 3 tribes across the state because there's more people in Milwaukee that look like them or accept them.
Yeah.
So we found that we are operating just fine with one group home. But what the problem that we were seeing is what happens when these kids age out of a system that they were forced into. So for 18 years of these kids' life, someone is giving them food, shelter, clothes, and whatnot. But then they turn 18 and everyone just washes their hand and says, go, right? Many of these kids don't have family to go to. Where are they supposed to go when they're 18? Who is going to teach them how to live as an adult? So we partnered with the Ollie Forney Center in New York to ask for some mentorship, and we opened C2 Apartments this past April, and it is for any LGBT young adult ages 18 to 24 that are aging out of the social welfare system, whether that's foster care or the juvenile justice system, or they're already experiencing homelessness. And this program, you know, we've created this 36-month program where they live rent-free, but we're helping them navigate the reality of being an adult: insurance, bank accounts, jobs,
yes,
all of, you know, cleaning your house. You know, we clean together and we teach these skills. And like I said, they live rent-free. The only requirement that they have is once they get a job, they have to save 20% of their paycheck into their own savings account and show that in their case management meetings every single week, so that when they leave this 36-month program, they have anywhere from $7,000 and up in their bank account as a nest egg. So they have food security, clothing security, rent security, and hopefully they'll be set up to be successful.
And I think that's awesome. I think your ability to have, you know, these young adults be able to take a step back and learn some responsibility. But I think the other amazing thing that you do is you start to regain some trust right, in the people around them, and trust in society that there is a value to their existence. And then my guess is that takes a while to get them there. Cause I know that, you know, after hearing your story and reading your website, you had somebody who said they had been in one of your houses for 2 years when they turned 18, and that was the longest they had consecutively lived in one place in their entire life. And when you think Absolutely. About that movement and what all that trauma is caused by that, your ability to be able to help them out is fantastic. So I know that right after the election, you know, I think your group was trying to reassess, what does this really mean to us? And then you had your gala on that Friday night at the Baird Center, and you had 700 people there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and that experience and what that meant to you?
Sure. You know, when we were planning our gala is always early November. So I was like 3 days before the election or after the election, whichever. And it happened to be after. And I'll be honest, my hope was that we didn't know who won by the time the election came, but yes, by the time the gala came.
Yep.
But the reality it was is that we did know who won. And that brought a whole new meaning of why we needed to be together that Friday. That Friday, there was a room full of queer people and allies. And I think everyone in the room that night we're all feeling a little down, right? We're all feeling a little down because, not because our person didn't win, but because what we knew was coming because of who won and what could be coming. You know, we know that queer kids, especially our trans kids, are the ones being targeted by adults. And let me say that again. We have adults targeting children who are the ones saying we shouldn't be targeting children, but they're targeting them.
Yes.
So we 700 adults are having these big feelings the night of the gala. I can't imagine what an 8, 11, 15, 18, 20-year-old child is feeling, especially if they're trans, especially if they're trans children of color, because that's just going after them even more. So we have this room filled with love. It's my favorite day of the year. We addressed the ugly that happened, that moved past it. And I think the theme of the night became, now more than ever, these children in our communities need us and need to see us and need to know that they have safe people, especially if we're removing the stickers and the flags from schools, and especially if we're removing all the safe spaces from everywhere. We as a collective community need to let these kids know that there are people that they can go to if they're in an unsafe moment, or there are businesses they can go to if they're in an unsafe situation. Because the reality of it is I don't think we're being Chicken Little in this situation. I think that we're going to see a lot of targeting coming. And again, now more than ever is our time to stand up for these kids. These kids who are one day going to be sitting in the chairs of the elected officials that are doing this to them right now, and show them you can be that person and make change happen.
Yes. And I thought one of the most impactful moments, at least for me, at the event was when you had all the allies stand up, and it was easily at least half the room.
It was.
And to me, the starting point is if you are not currently, like, if this is a concern to you, I think now is a great time to start figuring out how you can be a better ally. Because it's good, like you just said, Brad, it's gonna take everyone. And this is one of those areas I think that we're gonna need lots of strong people giving support to people who need it. I'm gonna interrupt for a minute. We're gonna take a caller. They've been waiting very patiently on the line. So Joe from Madison, if you're on the air.
Hi. I had been interested in the subject that had generated so much fire and heat earlier on, which is this effort by Nancy Mace to the war of the bathrooms, if we might say.
Yes.
And I would be really interested in some reaction on the part of your guest and you. You had mentioned earlier, Tom, that you and your wife were grappling with this and went into a unisex bathroom, if you will, and it's sort of like, who cares? No big deal.
No big deal.
And I wanted to say that as a woman, I've been in women's bathrooms when there have been trans women who've come in. I'm really not threatened. I really don't feel assault is, in the corner and that I should worry. I'd really worry about somebody like Matt Gaetz more than that. And I'd be curious. I sort of wonder if this puts us, this might be an opportunity to talk about the fact of what do we have and where, you know, Mike Johnson has put together this legislation or has agreed to this legislation, but he says hasn't outlined a plan on how to enforce it. Well, of course he hasn't. How do you do it? And he has instead said that this is up to the sergeant at arms to figure out how to enforce it. Come on. What does that mean? That every person who comes in, woman who comes into the bathroom has to, run the gauntlet of the sergeant at arms?
Right. Have an ID shown or something. Right. Yeah. But so
what? You know, wear a disguise? So I'd be curious what the two of you might have to think about this.
Great question. I'm gonna flip it over to Brad. Brad, because I think I said my piece on this, but Brad, I'd love to hear what you have to say on this.
I have a few thoughts on this. One, I think it's really funny that the only people are talking about it are the people that aren't transgender.
Yes.
And there's such a double standard. I think that for many people listening, how many times have you been at a festival or an event and the women's bathroom line is like all the way down the block and there's no line at the men's and all the women go in the men's room?
Yes.
Why is there a double standard? Why is that okay? What I don't understand. Number two, I have so much respect for this congresswoman because you know what? She's not batting an eye on it. She doesn't care where she uses the bathroom. What she's going there to do is to do her job. And that's what everyone should do is shut up and do your job. Why do you care about one of your colleagues? In fact, they're your colleague. How about some respect for them? If you expect it, you better give it. And number three, it's almost 2025, people. Like, we are,
yes.
I don't even know what to say to that. Like, it's, if these people heard their children speak to people that the way that they are speaking to people, they would check their children. And it's just really embarrassing to watch. I'm embarrassed for them.
I'm embarrassed for them also. And I will say this about Nancy Mace. If you go back into her history in 2021, she's on record as saying that, transgender people deserve respect and should be treated with the same dignity and respect as everyone else. I don't think this is about ideology. I definitely think this is about raising money, keeping the culture wars up, flooding the zone to keep the focus not on the most important things. So,
this morning, Tom, I saw a meme on social media and it was a side-by-side picture of that congresswoman, I don't remember her name.
Yeah, Sarah McBride, yeah.
Pointing to a homemade women biological sign that she put above the women's restroom at the Capitol.
Yep.
And next to it was another white woman standing to a bathroom that said, white women only. Why are these white people so concerned with bathrooms?
Yep, and we're going to take a break at this point. Once again, if you want to call in, 855-75-CIVIC.